Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Comes bob, bob, bobbing along, along. There'll be no more sobbing when he stops robbing his home. Sweet song, wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, the sun is red. Live, love, laugh and be happy. What if I be blue? Now I'm walking through fields of flowers. Rain may glisten, but still I listen for hours and hours. I'm just a kid again, doing what I did again, singing a song. When the red, red robin comes bob, bob, bobbing along.
And a second clean sheet in a row, but a devastating end to the game for Ronnie Schwartz as his penalty is kept out right at the death. Welcome to Charlton Live. So good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. My name is Louis Mendes. I hope you guys are well. We shall be looking back at yesterday's goalless draw with Oxford United. Could have won it though. Of course, Ronnie Schwartz's penalty, the last kick of the game, was brilliantly saved by Jack Stevens in the Oxford goal. So we come away with a share of the spoils and not all three. Joining me on the pod to look back at that game and ahead, of course, of Northampton on Tuesday. First up, the chef, Mark Newbury. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm very well, thank you, Louis. Covered in spaghetti. I've been trying to feed my boys this evening. Yeah. And so, you know, I've got bits of pasta dangling off bits which it shouldn't be dangling off.
Well, that obviously hasn't gone to plan. A bit like Ronnie Schwartz's penalty yesterday, unfortunately. But yeah, good to hear you well. And also a man who was there in person to witness that really devastating. I was really gutted at full time after that. Mr. Terry Smith, I didn't tell.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, how lucky was I?
Yeah.
to be there in person to witness it. I'm part wishing I was at home, covered in spaghetti.
Yeah, I know. I was covered in all sorts of food stuffs. Not spaghetti after the game yesterday. Just throwing stuff around the house because I was genuinely really gutted that we didn't win that. You know, when you get that chance. But that's the way it goes. So on tonight's show, we will hear the highlights shortly of that game. We'll hear, of course, from the Addicts boss, Lee Bayer. We've got some interviews with from the women's team as well. Eartha Cummings, the goalkeeper, and Ritesh Mishra, the manager, after today's 1-0 draw with Lewis, we'll hear. And also, we've got John Farrell on the show later on, an author who's written a book about the Addicts, Valley Heroes, Part 2. We had him on when he brought out Part 1 a couple of years ago, and Part 2's out now as well. So we'll hear from John about that later on, before perhaps we can head to that game with Northampton at the Valley on Tuesday. But Terry, as I said, you were there. A bit of a nothing game, really. I think Northampton hit the post. We had a couple of half-decent chances as well. It was sort of petering out into a goalless draw. And if it had just done that, I don't think we could have had too many complaints. But I mean, when you're given a penalty to win it with the last kick of the game, and you still come away without the 3 points, I mean that's pretty devastating. And no one more so than for Ronnie Schwartz, because I mean, you know, he had the minerals to step up and take it, but he was absolutely gutted when he was unable to put it past the goalkeeper.
Yeah, strange day. I mean, it as a contest, you're not going to in years to come remember the goalless draw at Kassam Stadium. It was, as you mentioned, a nothing game. It was petering out to 0-0, and we'd battled, and I guess I was thinking about it, and in isolation, a goalless draw up at Oxford. Apart from the last couple of games, they've been playing reasonably well. We're just starting to get something back, you know, with the victory last time out and what looked like another clean sheet going forward. We looked a stronger outfit, if still not firing on all cylinders, as it were. But, you know, and then I think probably, I mean, if you took it in isolation, that sort of result, a point away from home, you'd have been reasonably happy with it, or, you know, every probably Charlton fan would be reasonably happy with it. But the fact that we haven't been playing that well, or at least haven't been getting the results of late, except for last week, and then you think, fans will be looking at that and think that's not good enough. And you can sort of understand it, but, had we been achieving more points at home, had we been slightly higher up the table and in a better vein of form, a goalless draw against Oxford probably wouldn't be that bad. But, and then, as you say, the missed penalty right at the end, or not missed, saved penalty, should I say, right at the end. And I think the reason you're probably that gutted, and I probably was, and everybody is it looked like we were going to get away with something, because we'd just seen, well, I say just, a few minutes earlier, seen Ford smash that shot against the post, and we're thinking, wow, we got away with one big time there. And that was their only real chance in the game. And then we come up the other end a few minutes later, Schwartz has the opportunity. I mean, how many people thought it was a penalty? I'm not sure. It looked dubious. I still haven't seen it really in slow motion to say whether it was or it wasn't. Surprisingly, not too many Oxford players complained about it, but Schwartz hunted the ball down. He actually wanted it. You could see as soon as the ball was deflected out to the sidelines, he pursued the ball out there. So he clearly wanted it. He clearly wanted to make a mark, and you can't fault him for that. And he hit it reasonably well. Just decent height for the keeper. If it had been a couple of inches lower or a couple of inches higher, I don't think the keeper would have had a sniff. But it was perfect for him to make the save, and he did. And, you know, probably a point was about right, though.
Yeah, I tend to agree that the end result was probably fair. I mean, maybe getting slightly carried away, Mark, but I mean, if we had got those two extra points, you know, we'd be 2 points off the playoffs. Obviously, the game's in hand, and you know, I still think it's a hell of a long stretch, but you know, psychologically, if we'd taken 6 points in a week, it might have just made the end of the season, you know, shake up look a little bit different for us.
Yeah, of course. I mean, overall, 4 points for a week, 2 clean sheets. I think you've got to be reasonably happy with that. I mean, I look at it this way. If we'd conceded a penalty in the 93rd minute and Amos had saved it, we'd be on cloud nine and saying, great, we've got a point, which we weren't even going to have that. I mean, Oxford at home, you know, they've won 7 and they're a decent, he's got them playing decently well at home. And so, you know, I looked at it and thought to myself, was it going to be another banana skin game where you do well in one game and then you lose the next one? So it's funny because I'm quite superstitious about penalties. I can't watch them. If we get them, if the other team gets them, I tend to watch. But if we get one, I don't watch it. And it used to be that any time you'd see any footage of us getting a penalty at the covered end, everyone would be watching it, apart from me, would be turning my back on it. It was a good penalty. It was a good save. So, you know, I don't think Ronnie deserves any pelters for it. I'm just slightly surprised. I would have thought once Connor had gone off that, you know, they have a list of penalty takers, all clubs do. And I'm surprised that Jake didn't take it, because he's taken a couple for us. I know Ronnie wanted it, but that doesn't, just because you want it doesn't mean you get it. So, you know, it is what it is. I mean, a point. A tough place. Yeah, I'll take that.
Excellent stuff. Well, let's have a listen then to the highlights of the game over on Valley Pass Live. Yesterday, Steve Brown joined Greg Stubley and Terry Smith.
Oxford clear it away down the line. Fanwo up against Aguiar. Pearson and Fanwo just getting in each other's way. You could hear Pearce's call, but I think Fanwo had already committed to the challenge, and they're now just sorting it out between them. But you heard from up in the stand that Pearce wanted it, but Fanwo had almost committed to getting to it first, and fortunately for Charlton, Aguiar couldn't capitalise on the situation.
I don't know if he was meaning for Smith, but he's found Anike. Anike can pick out Miller on the left edge of the penalty area. Back into the line, Forster Kasky. Can he get a shot away? He can, but it's gone over the bar. Forster Kasky claiming it should have come off, or did come off more. The Oxford captain, referee says no, and it's gone away for a goal kick. But first meaningful shot on goal from Charlton.
Yeah, very acute angle, but excellent run from Forster Kasky beyond the back line.
Blocks it, but it falls to Ford again. Ford cross towards the far post. Ruffles gets something on Famo's header, comes down to Shadipo. The shot deflected, it goes wide. Cross towards the far post is high, but it falls to Gunter. Shadipo misses the header, and Gunter trying to get it past him. Ball towards the far post, sees someone, Forster Kasky with the header. Might even have just come off the bar and just over.
Ford again with the corner. Nike with the header away, and that will be the half-time whistle.
As the first half concludes, Oxford 0, Charlton 0 here at the Kassam Stadium.
Goran onto his right foot, ball towards the near post. It's cleared away by Ruffles, only as far as Martson. The shot ricochets down, comes to Forster Kasky. Gets onto his left foot backwards to Watson, who strikes, and it's over the bar.
Comes to the right to Ford. Ford taking past Martson. Oh, look, an angle for a shot that comes off the post. A great strike. Charlton still trying to defend as Brannigan to his left to Ruffles. And now Brannigan again inside to Shadipo. Held up by Fanwo, gets onto his right foot. Charlton trying to force Oxford back. Ruffles, ball towards near post, comes off of Watson. Shadipo gets it past Fanwo. Challenge from Watson was an important one, and then Gunter clears up towards Washington. And Washington will pick it up here again for Charlton. And Charlton have got 3-on-2 with Washington to his left to Miller. Miller can drive towards the penalty area. Onto his right foot, Miller goes for goal, and it's just wide. End-to-end stuff.
That's a really, really good break, actually.
Tip to 45 minutes now. 3 minutes have added on. Martson again with the throw. This time adjacent to the corner of the penalty area. Into Stockley, made the run into the penalty area. Turns away from his man. Is he taken out? The referee has given the penalty. And Charlton have a spot kick with seconds remaining.
Well, that's an outstanding turn, isn't it, from the set piece. I thought the throw was too high. I don't know how he's managed to actually chest that, swivel as it drops to the ground, half volley it in his own path, and then you've seen the replay, Greg, if you can cut in, or I don't know if your mic's on or not, but you've seen the replay, and I don't know how much contact. Oh, I'm having a little look now. Oh,
is it generous?
yes. Oh, listen, I'll say it's a cast iron one because it's Charlton and we could win the game, but I think Carl Robinson will be furious.
Well, Schwartz is stepping forward for this to take the penalty.
Put it this way, Tell, if that was me as the defender, I'm chasing the referee out the ground. I could be wrong. We've only got one angle, but this gives us a great chance.
Schwartz it is. He'll step forward to strike this. Does so. And the keeper saved it. Tips it over the bar. Charlton will have a corner.
Yeah.
No, we won't, because the referee now has blown his whistle. And Schwartz had the opportunity to win it for the Addicts right in the last second. And Stevens guessed right and tipped it over the bar.
He did. You're always kind of critical when it's the 93rd minute and your player misses the penalty, but he's popped it with power in and low into the keeper's bottom left-hand side, and you have to give credit to the goalkeeper for reading it, getting across, strong arm, and pushing it above the crossbar. But that is a world-class opportunity missed for Charlton to wrap up all 3 points. In fairness, I'm not sure we deserved all 3 points, Tell. I think a point is fair on reflection of the 90 minutes, but that is a superb opportunity denied by a wonderful goalkeeping save.
That was it. The very last kick of the game, and the goalkeeper keeps it out. Absolutely devastating. Terry, I mean, Mark mentioned it before. Were you surprised that Ronnie went to take it? I mean, according to Lee Bayer, he's quite good from the penalty spot, and, you know, just because we hadn't seen it before, his record is reasonably proficient from there. So there's no reason why he shouldn't have taken it, really, other than perhaps he hasn't played too much football recently.
Yeah, yes and no on that. I think the second part being the yes, I was a bit surprised, mainly because he'd only just come on, and therefore was he really up to speed with everything and striking a ball from any distance when you've only just come on, it shouldn't be that big a task, should it really? But players do like to play themselves in. So a little bit surprised in that. If he'd been playing longer, then no, I wouldn't have been surprised, because we hear stories that he is probably the best striker of a ball at the club. I don't know about a list of penalty takers. Certainly we know that Conor Washington's top of the list, if there is one. How far Schwartz is down that list, or even if he's on it at all, I don't know. Nobody does. It's a difficult one because, you know, could he have hit it any better? No, probably not. He could, as I say, said earlier, probably a couple of inches higher would have been perfect. But, you know, you've got to give some credit to the keeper for making a half-decent save. But I don't know. Are we clutching at straws saying a different penalty taker would have scored it? I don't know. There's no, you know, we've had Nicky Bailey, don't forget. So who's to say whether if somebody else had taken it, he would have scored it anyway. So, you know, I think it draw a line under it. It didn't go in. I think the funniest thing for me now, subsequently, is I caught up with the highlights on Quest, and Carl Robinson's post-match is a cracker if you want to listen to it, because he said, oh yeah, we do research on other teams. We spend a long time looking at other penalty takers and how best to handle penalties. Well, if his keeper and their people spent hours looking at Ronnie Schwartz videos to see what way he was taking it, I'd be stunned.
I mean, that would be some thorough research, like Marcelo Bielsa style. I did think I saw Carl Robinson walking down that little path next to Sparrow's Lane the other day with his binoculars. To be fair, even if you couldn't see him, you'd bloody hear him, wouldn't you, from a mile away? But it was good. So, I mean, it's the main talking point from the game, isn't it, Mark? Because not much else happened. He was one of the main conversations afterwards with fans as well on the forums and whatnot. You know, saw a few people who were quite upset with Ronnie. Most were supportive. Let's not get carried away. The majority are supportive and, you know, pick himself up. But, you know, we've seen a couple of people, A, questioning why he took it, and B, you know, questioning what he's brought to the side so far. You know, in his 14 appearances for the club, 11 have come from the bench. We haven't seen a great deal from him. He's still very much in that settling in phase, isn't he? Don't forget his family's over in Denmark as well. But we're told he's a striker that if he gets a chance inside a penalty box, he'll tend to make the goalkeeper work at a minimum. But we haven't really given him too many chances yet, have we?
Well, I mean, I think it's indicative of how our form's been over the last, you know, X amount of games, really. We've been so stop-start and, you know, we've been playing roulette with strikers up front. I mean, he did say, Terry said, he hadn't been on for long. He came on in the 77th minute. So he'd been on for over 15 minutes. You know, that should be enough. I can understand if he'd come on in the 87th minute. And he was a bit cold, but, you know, it's your 15 minutes, should be enough to get you up to speed. I do feel sorry for him. I think he's going to be a nabby character for us, meaning that, you know, he might not have everyone on his side at the beginning, but I think he'll come good. It can't be easy for the guy over here on his own. You know, his other half's pregnant back in Denmark. So whether he's FaceTiming her every night and seeing her, and okay, you've got your training, but, you know, it's half a day and stuff. You don't have the chance to do the social things at the moment. You know, whether he's staying, you know, in a local hotel or whatever, it's not going to be that fun for him. And mentally, you know, if you're not in a good place, I mean, you can say, you know, well, you can put it all aside for 90 minutes, but sometimes it's not that easy. I think if we have a service, I mean, I remember a few weeks ago he came on and didn't touch the ball at all. But I just think, you know, he's not getting a service. I mean, when you look at the goals, his goals package, as it were, he thrives on almost being sort of like sniffing a chance out and burying it. And we've not been getting that. We either overplay or underplay, or it's that long decision. Bo says himself, you know, we're not making the right decision in the final third. And I think if you want your strikers to have a bit of variance. If they're all like chucks, it's not going to work. So you want to have your Stockley and your Washington and your Schwartz and your Aniki. So you've got those, each one bringing something slightly different to the game. And at the moment, he's probably is suffering a little because I think of just how we're playing. And if we're trying to be a bit more secure, you know, chances are going to be far, few and far between. Look, I think possibly it's too early to tell. I mean, I don't understand abuse people give him online. I don't think it achieves absolutely anything. And I think people should give their heads a bit of a wobble, you know, if they want to go online and start atting him into things and criticising him, because it's they don't know the whole picture behind everything. And I think, you know, you support them until they don't. So let's support him.
Yeah. I mean, other than the penalty miss, Terry, we should try and talk about the other 92 minutes of the game. Fairly even. Like I say, I think that shot that hit the post from forward was Oxford's best chance. I think there was one from Shodipo, that was blocked in the first half as well. Our openings, a couple of them fell to Jake Forster-Caskey in their header. One from Miller as well on the counter-attack not long after Oxford had hit the post. I mean, you know, it wasn't a vintage performance from us. But I think, I think that there is a clear improvement that we've seen, you know, clearly from the Blackpool game where they're at the very lowest ebb. But we're looking a bit more of a coherent unit again now, which is something that has had to happen. Otherwise, we could have been in a bit of trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, talking about the game won't take that long, will it? To be fair, I think you've mentioned all the notable highlights. I think Jake Forster-Caskey coming back in the side was huge. I think he just adds that extra dimension to the midfield. It makes us harder to beat when he's in midfield because of his battling qualities, as well as being able to push us forward when needed. So I think he's key to our play, generally speaking. He makes other players better because Watson had a better game. Still made a couple of mistakes where you think, oh, you know, why, especially just in front of the penalty area when he tries the little flicks and stuff, and you think, oh, is that necessary? Because, I mean, you know, sort of things he'd probably get away with in the Championship as well. But I think, I think it's probably a sort of reflection of where we are and how we've been playing up until last week, where, you know, the confidence still, I don't think, is fully there yet. I think a few more battling performances like that, because let's face it, that's what it was. It was just, I don't mind it as well, actually, because if you're not going to win, don't lose. And I think it would have been quite easy for us to lose that. I mean, obviously, if Ford's shot had been a couple of inches to the left, then we would have found it tough to get back into that after that. But I think it's something we haven't done in recent games, especially at the Valley, of course, where if you're not going to win, just don't lose it. And I'd like to see that reciprocated going forward. I mean, let's battle. Let's just roll our sleeves up and make sure we're not going to concede any goals, and then take it from there. And we should have, you know, the strike power with the likes of Chucks and Liam Miller going forward, and now Jai Simi, obviously, if he plays and comes on, and Stockley and up there as well, Chucks and Eagle. We should have the firepower to be able to grab one or two goals, and we've proven that already. It's just trying to stop and going in the other end, and I think that definitely starts in midfield, which is why I think Jake's so important to us.
Yeah, certainly, and obviously that second clean sheet in our own mark is big for us again. Having looked a bit all over the place at the back at times this season, to get a couple of more settled performances at the back, obviously with Akin Fainwo coming back, Piercy coming in and looking strong as well. I mean, that's a massive boost for us.
Oh, huge. I mean, we've been leaking like a colander, absolutely. And you look at it and think to yourself, right, you just do the basics. Like Bowie says, you know, if we do the basics right, we're a good team. But it's not, we weren't doing the basics right. And I think, you look at the balance, we do look better with Jake. I mean, I disagree with someone online who just said, oh, Forster-Caskey's just bang average. I'm thinking, well, you know, he's not. I think he really has taken over sort of almost like a Cullen role this year in sort of like trying to make us tick. It's, let's say, doing the simple things, regimented, you know, not being silly. I think the good thing really is that after Matthews had gone off injured, you know, we had Gunter to replace, you know, straight away. And you know, that's when you've got sort of like some solid defenders like that and saying, right, you know, we're not going to be racing forward every 5 minutes. We're going to keep it tight. Let Pearce and Fainwo start to build a relationship, which all centre-halves need to do together. I mean, they've not really played. There's only a couple of games they've actually played together. So, you know, that's still in its learning stage. Regardless what you do on the training pitch, it's actually in the match with him talking and then knowing when to go out and when to stay where they are. Martson on the left, again, you know, is settled and he's not racing forward and defending a bit more. Midfield's looking solid, and we are going to catch people on the break. You know, it's getting the balls out fast enough. I think DJ's possibly needs a bit more time to settle. It's a pity because you wanted him to come in literally firing on all cylinders, but I don't think he's actually settled there yet. But it's not really been the kind of games we have the luxury of giving him time for. So that's why you've had the shinies and playing ahead of him. So it was good to see. I mean, it's the proof will be Tuesday night at home, because, you know, the two away games, you're thinking, lovely. Is the home form, if they concede an early one, will the heads drop again? And I think the litmus test will be Tuesday night.
Yeah, certainly will. Right, I mean, just before we hear from Lee Bowyer, then, Tal, I'm not talking about the playoff race. You know, we officially we're still in it, I guess. 4 points off Portsmouth. So Portsmouth are in sixth. They've only played one more game than us. So, you know, they got tonked yesterday by Northampton, and they're not playing well at the moment, Portsmouth. But, you know, so they are potentially catchable. Ipswich and Accrington ahead of us have still got two games in hand on us and 2 points ahead of us. I mean, you know, we're clutching at straws somewhat. It would have looked slightly different if we'd turned that into 3 points yesterday. But I mean, your views on it, Tal? Have you? I mean, me and Tom have both said we've given up now. Have you?
It's a weird one. No, I haven't. But that's not necessarily because I'm full of ridiculous belief or anything. It's just that, first of all, you know, when the season kicked off with what had happened to us pre-season and in the previous years after Thomas Sengog took over, I was pretty much treated this season like a throwaway season, if you like, a sort of plus. So if we get anything from this, it's an absolute bonus because, you know, 6 months ago, I wasn't sure we'd even have a club to support at all. So I'm quite happy for it. I say happy, that's not the right word. I'm quite okay with this season just being one of, all right, we get this out of the way, especially now with the salary cap gone, and we can concentrate on going forward once this season's gone and everything's sort of back to normal, if it can be. Regards to the playoffs specifically, I mean, you look at Portsmouth. I mean, yesterday's a classic example with Northampton putting four past Portsmouth just before they come to us. Perfect, thank you. But Portsmouth, I mean, they'd gone six games without losing, I think, possibly even more, but certainly they'd drawn one and won five of the last six. And then they go and get beaten 4-1 by Northampton. So it just sums up this league. Anybody puts five or six runs together, five or six wins together, then they're going to be there or thereabouts and up there. And obviously I'd much rather do that towards the end of the season than at the beginning or the middle. So if we're still in, you know, in and around it with like we are now, and we put five or six, I mean, all right, you can't necessarily see it the way we've been playing, but if we can, you know, somehow put together a sequence of five or six wins in let's say seven or eight and draw the others, then we will be there or thereabouts. And who knows, you know, if I was a betting man, no, I probably wouldn't put my house on it, but you never know.
Yeah, well, Lee Bowyer would have lost his house yesterday, as we're about to hear in his post-match interview, actually. I mean, that run, any run for Portsmouth was actually a bit further away than you remember, actually. It was just before Christmas. They've won only one in their last six now. They've lost four.
Who was I thinking of? Maybe Peterborough then, who's at the top?
Yeah, Peterborough at the top now. But
Beg your pardon.
There's so many teams at the moment who, you know, are capable of going on a run, but then ever so quietly seem to have lost loads of points. Like, I think Hull, when they were at the top around Christmas, all of a sudden they seemed to drop off. And Lincoln had gone three games without a win before yesterday. It's amazing how easily so many teams at the top can just get stuck into little dips in form. But unfortunately, we've sort of outdone them in that regard.
It's more of a valley than a dip, if you'll pardon the pun.
Yeah, exactly that. And ironically, it is at the valley where we have a lot of our problems. Anyway, let's hear from the man who is in charge at the Valley Addicts, boss, Lee Bowyer. I spoke to him after yesterday's draw with Oxford and asked what he made of the game.
Yeah, I think it was two good teams, cancelled each other out, really. I thought it was an even game. I think a point was probably fair. A draw was the right result over the 90 minutes, but obviously disappointed when you have a an opportunity like we did at the end, last kick, you can nick the free, really. Not that we didn't deserve anything, but it would have been harsh on Oxford if we scored that. So, but a lot of positives to take from that. Another clean sheet, another good away performance. Players, again, gave everything. They looked a bit tired at times, I felt. But they gave everything. And me standing on the side, I can't ask for no more, you know.
Tough to take for Ronnie Swartz with that missed penalty with the last kick of the game. You know, he's sort of still bedding into the side. And, I mean, that would have been a great moment for him to get his name in the headlines. But, I mean, it was a great save as well from the keeper. I don't think there was too much wrong with the penalty, really.
No, he's very good at him. Like the one thing I've seen Ronnie do, that's take a good penalty. Like before he came to the club, we obviously looked at a lot of clips and there was penalties here in them clips. The one thing that did surprise me, he didn't go a bit higher. So he normally puts them in with pace in the top corner. Like I'd have been homeless now because I'd have put my ass on him scoring that. But the keeper's made a great save and you can't take that away from it. So that's what he's paid to do, is make saves, and he's made it. Would I trust Ronnie to go and take another penalty tomorrow? Yeah, I would. But that's the game, unfortunately, and we just ain't getting that little break, are we? That's just not really coming our way. And all we can do is keep trying and working hard and trying to do the right things, and I think we've done that today. One criticism from today, I'd say we won the ball back. Our traps worked. We won the ball back in great areas. And just that next pass or the second pass or that final cross, you know, like it was, we let them off the hook so many times. If we'd have taken care a little bit better, then I think we'd have probably scored a couple.
What do you say to Ronnie after that? Because obviously he's still finding his chances sort of few and far between. He makes his appearances off the bench. He went that long time without playing before he joined the club, of course. And for him, you know, not with his family around at the moment, it could be quite easy for him to get a little bit down after something like that.
Yeah, I said to him, Ronnie, look, I trust him. I said to him, look, forget it. It's done. The keeper's made a good save. Like, forget it. Don't worry about it. You can't change it now. He won't sleep tonight. 100% he won't sleep. But there's only certain things you can change, and you can't change that because it's done, it's gone. So it'll dwell on his mind for a little bit. But again, I think he has to just get over it. Right? It's another game Tuesday. But I think he'll struggle to sleep tonight because I've missed chances myself, and then you just keep replaying it over your head a million times. I guarantee in his head, he's thinking, oh, I should have gone that way, and I should have gone this one, I should have hit it a bit higher. Like, this would be going for his head at night. But like I said, I trust him. He's a good finisher. And just because he's missed a penalty, or the keeper saved a penalty, I don't think he missed it, and the keeper saved it. So just because the keeper saved it, it doesn't make him all of a sudden someone bad.
You mentioned obviously the clean sheet as well, second clean sheet in a week. I mean, there's a clear improvement that we've seen from what happened last weekend in the two games this week. So you must be pleased with how, you know, the side's looking more organised again.
Yeah, it's called hard work. That's all it is, hard work. If you work hard and do the basics right. A couple of times we didn't. We should have just cleared our lines, and we tried to be too cute and too clever, and we nearly got found out, but they nearly punished us. In recent weeks, we've been punished in every slight little mistake we made, but today that didn't happen. So, yeah, the players, if you work hard and we do the right things, the basics right, then we're a good side. We've got good players and we're a good side. Individual mistakes out, then we can compete with any team in this league, easy. I have no doubt. There's not one team that would frighten me if we had to play them at Wembley tomorrow. I wouldn't be frightened playing them anyway. So just just have to do them basic things and work hard, and hopefully things start going our way.
Adam went off in the first half. It's hard to tell from the stream what was wrong with him, but have you any early assessment on him?
Hamstring. He felt it when he headed the ball back to the keeper. So felt like a little twinge. So we'll have to assess that and see how he is tomorrow.
And obviously, you mentioned that there's no team that you'd be scared of playing at Wembley, but in order to be there, obviously, the home form will need to pick up, and it'll have to start on Tuesday with a Northampton side that, as does every side we're about to play, seem to have suddenly picked up out of nowhere. I mean, they got a big result today, but you know, it's important that Charlton can go again on Tuesday and start to improve that home form.
Yeah. We have to turn it around, and we have to turn it around starting Tuesday. I agree with what you just said. I think these next three home games are going to be so important to what happens to us. But again, there's positives to take from today, something else to build on. Northampton are a completely different team to the one that we played away earlier on in the season. I went and watched them the other week against Ipswich. Completely different. It was a 3-5-2 and it was long ball and not anymore. They're hard working and they're honest, and they're not a bad side. They're better than Ipswich when I watched it. They should have beat Ipswich away, so we have to be at it for sure. But again, if we put performance in like today, then we'll have a good chance of winning.
So obviously Ben Watson got another start today after he played well in the midweek against Wigan. I thought he was really excellent again today, you know, cleaning everything up in front of the back four, getting into the right spaces. It felt like his form in sort of the few weeks before Wigan was not quite there, but now it feels like he's getting back to his best. How much of a boost has that been for you and the team?
It's important. He's a senior player and he's got a lot of experience, and I think he'd missed a little bit, didn't he, through injury, and then it took him a little bit to catch up. But yeah, again today I thought he was excellent. I took him off because he'd been booked, and other weeks within a minute or 2 minutes and other players been sent off, so we couldn't take that risk. So yeah, I thought having Ben back to his normal self is important.
And was that the same reason you took Chucks off at halftime? He was on the booking and been punished in recent weeks for that.
Good guess, Benji. That's the reason why I took him off.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Gunter doing exactly that, almost gets the ball off Dulu. He doesn't know where it is. Williams picks it up. Anike in the box. Can he touch it to Swartz? He can!
Yes!
First goal for the Onyx, and it's a stormer.
What a finish from the new boy.
Charlton Live.
Well, welcome back to Charlton Live on your Sunday evening, looking back at the goalless draw with Oxford. We just heard there before the break from the Addicts boss, Lee Bowyer. Asked him, obviously, you know, how he's going to pick up Ronnie Schwartz for starters. And he's got a job on his hands there. I mean, he's had a big week, hasn't he, Mark? Because this time last week, I think there was a few of us who were wondering if we weren't going to be seeing him much more after what happened against Blackpool. So, you know, he'll be pleased that he's been able to get some sort of reaction out of him this week.
Yeah, I mean, I heard that. I didn't agree with you guys, but I could understand why you might have felt like that. He has had a big week, and obviously there's been phone calls and meetings he's had above him, and to say, right, this is what we're trying to do. And, you know, fair play to Sandgaard. He's not listened to, you know, X, Y, and Z who have been atting him in every tweet they put, which get rid of Bowyer. He's going to make his own decisions. I think he understands. He might not be a football person, but I think he would understand to change the manager now wouldn't guarantee us getting in the playoffs. It wouldn't guarantee us getting relegated. You know, we'd be in the same position. I think he's looking at it that way. I think Bowyer's going to look and say, right, I've got, you know, one or two players coming back. I mean, I think Innes is returning to training this week. So, you know, that bodes well if he stays fit. And he can look about and say, right, we do have some different options now with people coming back from sort of like injuries. And I think that's the best thing for Bowyer to do. So, right, just have some solid sessions in the warm-up, in training, and take it from there. I mean, do I think we're going to finish in the top six? Hand on heart, I don't. I mean, if we did, I agree with Bowyer. I don't think there's anyone there who would scare us. But I think odds on our day, I think we're equally as capable of turning someone over as being turned over. But again, I agree with Terry. It is almost like a throwaway season from where we started. I think what it was is because we'd had such a decent start, I think people's expectations. I mean, I've talked about it plenty of times on here, saying that your expectation levels change week by week as a football fan. I mean, it's, you know, you have a couple of wins and you're top of the world, and you have a couple of losses and it's sack the manager, not fit to wear the shirt. You're thinking, well, the personnel hasn't really changed totally. You know, people suddenly don't become bad players overnight. You know, their confidence might go, but it's for them. That's where good coaches can come in and say, right, let's have you on the training ground. Let's get your confidence up. Let's, you know, have you knocking in balls past Ashley Maynard-Brew or whoever for a whole training session. You know where the goal is. It doesn't change. You know, just it's about that final decision making. I think sort of like one or two things with Bowyer, he's probably now got the basic idea of if he's got all his players fit, who he wants to start. So it's probably not going to be too much of a difference over the next couple of weeks unless an injury puts someone out. So, I mean, it's only the second time this season we've actually started the same team, you know, in consecutive games. So, you know, it's I trust him to be doing the right thing. So I don't think he's going to let them coast. And I think, you know, understands that hard work pays off. I mean, it always used to be we might not have been the most skillful sides over the years. You know, Terry will attest to that. But, you know, we worked hard. You know, we were a hard-working team, and the hard work pays off sometimes. If you're fitter than the other team, that can pay off. So we shall see on Tuesday. Like I said, I think Tuesday night is the litmus test.
Yeah, certainly will be. Right, let's have a look at some of the tweets and emails that have come in. Charlton Exile said it would have been nice to have beaten Gobbo yesterday. when Carl Robinson was our manager, yeah, Charlton Exile wasn't a big fan of listening to the post-match. I'm going to say conversations, but they're post-match like verbal essays, really, weren't they, Terry? Do you remember that one away at Blackpool, Terry, when we spoke to Carl Robinson literally for about 40 minutes, 20 of which was him speaking to us before the interview. Then we did a 20-minute long interview. That was a long one.
I think if I was to add up all my input into chats with Carl Robinson over a period of how many years was it? I don't know. How many games was it?
It was only about 14 months. I was shocked when I looked up. It felt like a lot longer.
Really? Okay, yeah. 14 months' worth of post-match interviews. I'd be lucky to get 20 minutes out of the whole 14 months, I think.
Yeah.
Because I quite like Carl. It's difficult not to be fair. You just had to ask one question and just let him go, and he'd be away. You'd be lucky to get a word in edgewise.
I was going to say you'd be lucky to finish your question as well. Really,
I don't think I did. To be fair,
yeah, but no, he was. He did have a bit of a motor mouth on him, old Carl Robinson, which Charlton XR wasn't always the biggest fan of. Charlton Hack says it could be a very valuable point if we can capitalise in our next three home games. It's a massive 8 days coming up. For the Addicts when they're at home three times, starting with that game against Northampton on Tuesday. Richard Burton says, really good to see two clean sheets in a row. The defence and midfield are looking better and more solid generally, which is a fundamental. But we've been ponderous going forward. Too many poor touches and passes in promising positions. Positive change, though, overall. Cheers for your message, guys. There, we've got a couple of emails coming as well. McSquared says, another very scrappy game, very few chances at either end, defences on top, but another satisfying clean sheet at least. We were given a golden chance to take all 3 points with the last kick of the match, but ultimately it would have been smash and grab. Wouldn't have Swartz taking penalties in view of the fact that he's only been a peripheral player since he arrived and has only scored one goal so far. However, he didn't do a lot wrong. At least it was a great save and not a miss. At the end of the day, as gutting as it was, we have to accept penalties aren't always successful. I don't know if anyone saw Yaya Sanogo's penalty for Huddersfield against Cardiff on Friday night. Now, if Ronnie had done that, then we'd have some complaining to do. It was quite funny because obviously that was Dylan in goal for Cardiff, and that's the third penalty he's faced, the third one that hasn't gone in. And I saw his dad on Twitter, obviously very proud of his son, who's doing really well, and we're all pleased for him, but making a big deal out of the fact that Dylan hasn't let in penalties in three in a row now. But I'm thinking, yeah, if I'm standing in goal for that Yaya Sanogo penalty, same outcome because it went a mile wide. But there we go. Right, McSquared continued. Let's face it, a draw on the day was a fair result. Oxford played like a typical Robinson side. Hard working, miserly and unexciting. We had to play the same way to cancel them out. And that's exactly what we did. Pearce and Fainwo were extremely solid again and gave their all for the cause. Oxford are clearly about our level at the moment. At least we appear to have cut out the sloppy defensive mistakes for the time being, and that gives us a platform to go on and turn a point into all three. My main concern at the moment is that Miller's form seems to have dipped sharply in the past few weeks. We need him to be firing on all cylinders in order to be a significant threat to the opposition defences. He's superb when running with the ball, but at times his control is very poor. However, we don't have anyone to replace him, so we will just have to hope he comes good again. All in all, a very decent away point to add to our total. Let's see what happens in the next few matches. That's from McSquared. Yeah, what did you make of that, Liam Miller? Terry, obviously, he has dropped off a little bit. I mean, there was one point yesterday, I think, during the second half, where he picked up the ball in our half, drove forward, and I'm thinking, right, here we go. And there has just been a little bit of a lack of end products, perhaps, from him recently.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think he'd probably be the first one to admit it as well. On occasions, I think opposition management and players will now know what he brings, and quite a few occasions, you know, you see teams doubling up on him, which makes it more difficult for him to perform, especially when he operates on the left. They try and make sure he stays on his left foot because he's clearly right-footed and he wants to cut back in. And I remember saying to a few people over the course of the last few weeks, you know, if you are going to cut in, if you're going to sort of feign to go left and then cut in on your right because that's your favourite foot, you've got to produce. Once you've done that, defenders know you're going to do that, you've then got to produce afterwards, so they've then got to try and cover your right foot as well, because what he is very good at is going to do something with the right and then going back out again on the left and opening up space. And he did that in the first few weeks he was here and sort of hasn't been able to do it since. Now, whether that's down to, whether it's a confidence thing and then just snatching at it, because there was a couple of times where he did take a heavy touch. One particular one by the byline where he seemed to have got past his man and then just took that last heavy touch when you think, just get it in the box. But, you know, he probably looked up and there wasn't that much in there perhaps, but just get it in the box and then see what happens. And as, you know, as he plays more games, that'll come, more experience, I think, because let's not forget he's spent most of his time either out on loan or in the under-23s. So, you know, he hasn't had the match day experience necessarily that other players have. And so it'll come, hopefully. And I think again, it's probably all down to this whole horrible confidence thing. You know, when the team's playing well and you're confident, these sort of things come off. When you're second-guessing yourself, when you're thinking, oh, if I cut back in on my right now, I'm covered off, so I can't, you know, if I cross it, there's nobody there. You know, it's a whole gamut of emotions that that stop you doing things like that. I remember speaking to Paul Mortimer about it once, and he said, you know, when players are just lacking in confidence, that football becomes a tennis ball, and controlling it and striking it just becomes that much harder. And that seems to be what both Miller and probably quite a bit of the side is going through.
Yeah, certainly certainly tailed off a little bit though, unfortunately. Well, Richard Church says, "Hi guys, so I was somewhat perplexed by myself during and after yesterday's game. I wasn't shouting at the laptop or jumping up and down when we got the penalty. Equally, I didn't collapse in a heap when Ronnie missed it. It just seems a bit meh. Even Lee Bowyer didn't appear to be upset with the drop of two more points. It feels like we've all given up a little bit. Lockdown fatigue, perhaps. I wonder if you have got less emails and tweets this week." Yeah, we certainly have. Is it just me, or are we feeling a bit jaded? Anyway, I enjoyed the commentary and Steve Brown's input as well. I will be there online again on Tuesday night. Come on, you Reds. That's from Richard. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I was a bit of an outlier because, I mean, I saw Tom Welling actually put on Twitter that he wasn't feeling it either, even when we won the penalty. When we won the penalty, I jumped out of my chair and cheering. And then when, to be fair, as soon as Roddy picked it up, I was like, oh, no, I don't fancy him to score this. Just, you know, I just felt like it didn't quite feel right. But, you know, when he missed, like I say, I was genuinely devastated. I don't know, Mark, do you feel a little bit detached from it? You know, obviously me and Terry are lucky that we get to go to, you know, Terry's going to all the games, I'm going to all the home ones and get to work the away ones from home. So I feel, maybe I feel slightly more involved because I'm lucky like that. And maybe that's something that's a bit different for everyone, unfortunately, at the moment.
Yeah, it's always hard. It's always difficult. And the fact that we're not there, I think, A, has made a difference to our home form. I mean, we've said ourselves on here that some of the games we've lost, we think we've got could have got something from if there'd been a crowd there roaring them on and getting into them. I totally understand where Tom's coming from. I mean, possibly the games are coming thick and fast, and there's no steady influence of results for us because it is up and down. Your emotions, you feel like a hormonal teenager because you're feeling so down and the results come through, and if you haven't watched it, you know, then it comes through on your phone, you're like, oh, you know, we didn't win again, or we did this. So it is difficult to get that. One question I had, I wasn't sure whether you or Terry might be able to answer, why were we in blue yesterday? Because I couldn't see how we clashed with Oxford's colours.
Yeah, I don't know. I do wonder if there's like a contractual agreement that we have to wear the blue kit a certain amount of times or something, because it did seem fairly pointless, but who knows? It's a nice enough kit, so it was good to give it an outing.
And on sale as well now in the club shop.
Oh, are you on commission or something, Mark? I mean, yeah, it's
making as much money as I can, Louis, that's it.
I did see they've put the kits on with a discount. Right, last email comes in from Phil. Hi, guys. A fair result yesterday. I was ashamed we didn't pick up all 3 points with the last kick of the game. No criticism of Schwartz as the penalty was well struck and also well directed. Okay, the height was perfect for the keeper, but he guessed right and made the save. Could still do with playing the ball quicker, and I do wish we would look to take throw-ins in a more of a positive way. We always dither with the ball and eventually throw it short to a player within 5 yards and under pressure. We never look for a quick throw, and there is never any movement or runs from players to try and find space. On the odd occasion someone finds space, the thrower is never looking at them, as they only want to throw it short. More solid performance, though, and can only hope that they can take that into Tuesday's. Referees certainly take an exception to the aerial challenges of Chucks, despite the fact he never leads with his arm, but just uses his arms as leverage, as every other player does. Good to have Stockley up there as well, so if either attracts the wrath of the officials, they can always use the sub for a straight swap. Hope we can create and take a couple of chances on Tuesday and get a win at the Valley first. Yeah, I did Chuck's booked again. I didn't see the replay, so I didn't see how bad it was, but it did seem, I don't know, it does seem like he's one of those players who gets unfairly targeted by referees purely because of his size, but unfortunately that's the way it goes. Right, over at the Oakwood today, on Sunday, I went and watched the Charlton Athletics women's team game with Lewis, a 1-1 draw in the end. Jess King giving the Addicts a lead just after half time, sort of a free kick from Ella Rutherford that went in towards the near post. The goalkeeper spilt it, and King was joining on the spot just to turn it in, and you know, massive lead. But unfortunately, just 5 minutes later, a bit of a mix-up between Grace Coombs And the Addicts goalkeeper, Erford Commins. I think Grace has just gone to head it back and just got it a little bit short, unfortunately. And the Lewis player lifted it over Erford and made it at 1-1 5 minutes later. And that's how it did end. I think a draw, probably a fair result. The Addicts were pushing for it at the end, but I would say that Lewis had the best, particularly of the first half. Happy with a point. It moves the Addicts up a place. The bottom of the table looks slightly different now. So London Bees were beaten heavily at home by Leicester today, 7-0, I think it was. So they've dropped to the bottom. Coventry got a completely unexpected 1-0 win over London City Lionesses, the team that the Addicts beat last week, Coventry. So they've now climbed up to 10 points. They're in 10th. Cheltenham are in 9th on 11. London Bees are bottom in 11th on 8 points. They've played 3 more games than the Addicts and 2 more games than Coventry. So Cheltenham looking good still. But if they could have found a winner today, that would have helped ease their relegation fears. But anyway, after the game, I caught up then with both Ratish Mishra, the Addicts manager, who was the manager of the month for February. But first, let's hear from Erford Cummings, the Addicts goalkeeper. Asked her what she made of the 1-0 draw with Lewis.
I think it's really disappointing, the final result, and the way we conceded the goal is not good enough. That was pretty poor from us. I think on balance, they were the better team in the first half, but in the second half we came back into it and I think we could have won the game. But a draw is not the most unfair result in the world, but it's just frustrating.
I mean, it's more unbeaten now. You know, I was just saying to Ritesh, with the Manager of the Month award, we've seen that Charlton are picking up points now that perhaps they hadn't been doing earlier on in the season. You're feeling a little bit of momentum building up.
Yeah, definitely. Like, that's, I think, 4 games that we've not lost in, and that's massive. We've got 6 points, I think, from that, and like moving up the table a bit and putting a bit of distance between us and the bottom, which is really quite like nice to take a bit of pressure off. I think, yeah, it seems like we're going in the right direction. Like, a lot of good players came in January and like have kind of re-energised the squad. Yeah. It's been good.
You mentioned you felt a draw was a fair result. We saw Charlton pushing for the winner there towards the end. You know, it's quite tight down that bottom. It would have been a good one to get.
Yeah, definitely. I think if any team deserved to win it, we did. But I think given the kind of, we did well to kind of stay in it at the beginning and keep it 0-0, and probably could have won it, should have won it. Like, we should have won it in the second half because we were the better team. But I think, a win would have been massive, but a point's really important too.
You mentioned, obviously, the disappointment of the goal that Charlton conceded. I don't know if it was a miscommunication or a slightly underhit back header, but it's the way you react to that that's important, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly. You can't, like, let that ruin the whole game and stuff. And thankfully, we didn't, like, let that build up too much, and they didn't really get any other opportunities barring their one goal, so that was good.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you've seen the results elsewhere yet, but Coventry got a big win today, 1-0. Obviously, London Bees are on the end of it with a tonking, but it's tight down that bottom. You still feel confident that Charlton have got a lot to play for and they can stay up in this division?
I'm confident. Oh, 100% we can stay up. I think we've really been like building, and now, like we were just saying in there, we're becoming a team that's really hard to beat. Like, previously in the season, we might have lost these games and stuff, but no, I think I'm fully confident we're going to stay up.
It's a big game again next week, Sheffield, tough one, but you know, Leticia's saying you play better against the bigger teams sometimes.
Yeah, it's true, and I think we can definitely go up there and get something. I don't see why not. I think we've been
probably good. Mixed feelings now. I think we wanted to come into the game and get 3 points. I think that would have really helped our cause to secure our status. But you know, what we have done well this year, certainly for most of those games we've not played that well, we haven't lost, and I think today is probably another example of that, where before Christmas, the last 12 months, when we're not playing well, we tend to lose games. I think today we didn't play that well, but we were able to grind out at least a point, and you know, points are important for us. So, you know, I can't be too disappointed, but definitely we still got to get better in lots of areas.
But yeah, you mentioned now 4 unbeaten now, so that run, you're picking up these odd points here and there, will help towards this battle for survival.
Yeah, and we're in a position where we have still a few games left to go, and the only way you use that to your advantage if you do pick up points, whether it's 3 or 1. So, you know, if you look back at the last 4 games, we are unbeaten. We look fairly solid, I think. But there's still definitely areas we need to improve on. So, you know, like I say, mixed feelings at the moment.
Obviously, I thought started the game quite well, but then the visitors came back into it before half time. But it felt to me that Charlton looked the side more likely, certainly towards the end of the second half.
Yes, I think that we came into the game knowing they've got some good players and they've got some threats. They are investing quite heavily in their squad. And we prepared for their key strengths. I don't think we dealt with that very well in the first half. But then I think we came out in the second half and started okay and managed their threats a little bit better. I, to be honest, you know, looking back at the game, I think it was quite a scrappy game. There wasn't really much in the two teams, to be honest. So I think we would have been quite fortunate to get 3 points, but obviously would have loved to nick it. And same for them. I don't think they did enough to win the game. And it was, you know, quite tight between both teams.
You mentioned obviously that growing confidence we've seen over the last few weeks. Obviously, you were personally rewarded with the Manager of the Month award. Is that something you feel that is a result of the whole team improving over the last few weeks?
I think the whole group is improving. There's lots of things that we're getting better at. But, you know, to be honest, we haven't. Our performances have been quite strong throughout the season. What we're getting better at is just managing those key moments and taking advantage of key moments and not conceding as many chances. And that's really helped us just feel a bit more solid. But to be honest, the Manager of the Month award was quite a strange one because we've still got loads of work to do and I don't want to get carried away at all. It's very nice to be recognised for that. But I realise that March is an even bigger month for us than February was. So, of course, if you receive an award, it means you're doing something well. But we need to keep going.
Shinny prepares to take. Shinny takes. It's a shot. Oh, great free kick. Oh. The power was too strong for Eastwood. He dived to his left, but it's past him. And Shinny, who got the assist for the first goal, now opens his Charlton account with a lovely free kick. And Charlton, just before half time, make it 2. That you're going to be okay anyway.
You know there's no right or reason. Charlton Live. Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. So just before the break there, we heard from Ratish and from Urfa after the 1-1 draw with Lewis. And now there's something else I promised at the top of the show. We'll hear from John Farrell, Urfa, Charlton fan. He put together a book called The Valley Heroes a couple of years ago, listing all the top scorers in Charlton seasons and with a character as well, all their history, lots of little interesting facts about them. And now part two is out. So I spoke to John on the phone earlier on today, and he can tell us a little bit more about the book.
Well, this is Popular Valley Heroes series. So this is part two, and this covers the top scorers for each season from 1970 up to 2020. Just to give you an idea of the size of it, because it runs out to 240 pages and it covers 34 players, even though it's actually 50 years span, but some players were obviously top scorer more than once. And then included in the book is a review of their career, not just with Charlton, their whole career with their stats for other clubs as well. And then there's a review of the season for each season that they were top scorer. So you can see how they got their total of goals. Mm-hmm. And it's also illustrated because my fellow Charlton fan, David Ramzan, has once again, as he did for part one, provided caricatures of each player. So there's a caricature of each player for each chapter, if you like. Mm-hmm.
It must have been enjoyable researching all these Charlton legends and looking into their past.
Well, it was, because I mean, I started going to the Valley in 1961, so I can remember obviously the players. This one starts in 69-70. You've got Ray Tracy, who was Irish international that many people will remember. He was top scorer for 3 seasons, and then following on from that, we had Arthur Horsfield, who was prolific for a couple of seasons. And then a certain character called Derek Hales, who's the club's record goal scorer with 168 goals. Now, he actually features 7 times in this book because he was top goal scorer on 7 different seasons. And, of course, Mike Flanagan's in there as well. He got 120 goals overall. He was top scorer for three seasons.
Yeah, and so I mean, obviously, you mentioned Derek Hales. Obviously, that's a name that's synonymous with the club over the years. And I mean, did you find anything sort of really interesting about him that perhaps you didn't know before, or is it more just like sort of delving into his history? Because he had quite a varied career, didn't he?
Well, yes, of course, he started non-league, made his name playing for Dartford, and that's when he got signed up by Luton. Didn't get much of a chance there, and Theo Fo, who did one of his inspired signings. He did some inspired signings, Theo, not only to get Derek Hales, but also, you know, Colin Powell and Mike Flanagan for really peanuts. And Hales' his career really took off at the Valley. And he, obviously, after a few seasons, being a prolific scorer for us, of course, he got whisked off to First Division as it was then, Derby County, for a record fee, and also played for West Ham in the top division, but then returned to us and then had several more seasons when he was top goal scorer. So he had quite a career, and obviously finished off at Gillingham.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, even he was slightly before my time, but you hear all sorts of stories about Derek Hales that I found quite interesting. Obviously, you've got, you know, it goes up to quite recently as well, so you've got some more players who'd be more well known for the younger generation in the book as well.
So coming towards the more recent times, I mean, also our management team features in it because Lee Bowyer was top scorer in 95-96. And Johnny Jackson was also a top scorer for two seasons more recently. And, of course, you've got the... in here, you've also got the Premier League seasons when you've got, obviously, Clive Mendonca that got us up there, really, with his 28 goals in 97-98. And then, of course, once you're in there, you've got Jonsson Johansson, Jason Yule was top scorer for three seasons. And then Darren Bent was... he was top goal scorer for two seasons, so they were pretty prolific when we were in the Premier. And we had Sean Bartlett in there as well, who got a few. He was top goal scorer one season.
Excellent stuff. So obviously a great keepsake full of excellent memories for Charlton fans. How can they get their hands on this book?
Well, it's published on, it's on Amazon, and the paperback copy is $14.99, same as part one. And the Kindle version is $1.99. So if you put in Valley Heroes into Amazon, it'll find both books. So you want one or both, because obviously you put the two together and you've got 100 years, because it's the first one's 1920 to 1969, and the second one is 1970 to 2020.
Right, so thanks to John. That's available now on Amazon, as he said there at the end. So if you want to get your hands on that, just head over to Amazon and put Valley Heroes into the search, and you'll find the book. So, I mean, before we end the show, Terry and Mark, we need to look ahead to this Northampton game. It's a big... If we get 9 points from this week, Terry, then maybe I might start to change my tune. But us getting 9 points at home so far, on average this season, has taken about 10 months. So if we can do it in a week, what do you reckon?
Yeah, well, I admire your confidence and your positivity. I think, as I mentioned before, even though I got the team name wrong, and Peterborough hadn't lost for six games, and they lost yesterday to Burton, so the point still applies. If we can, somehow, and the three home games, normally speaking, you would think would be the best way to start that sort of run, because three home games, you'd fancy most teams then to put in winning performances and come away with 9 points. But obviously this season it's all up in the air, and we're the second best team away from home and something like the 15th best team at home. So it's not something I'm necessarily expecting, but if we can get... And look, it's Northampton, Shrewsbury and Bristol, I think, are the three, aren't they, coming up. Now, they are teams that that you would expect us to be able to compete with, and so why not? And if we can put three wins on the board... and then we got Wimbledon away after that. So, you know, it starts to look a much better prospect. But we do need to... I mean, obviously, it's clear and it's not rocket science. You know, for us to be anywhere near the playoffs, these next three games at home are probably pivotal.
Yeah, I mean, absolute minimum 7 points. I think 9 points would, you know, like I say, maybe make me change my tune, Mark. I mean, going into it, how are you feeling? Is there anyone... You know, Bo went with an unchanged side yesterday. You know, I think that's only about the third time he's done that this season. Would you go with that again?
Well, first of all, it depends if Matthews is going to be fit. So otherwise,
good point. Yeah, no, he's not. So I imagine he won't. So you won't do that. But other than maybe Gunter coming in,
and then
he can bring
Prattley back onto the bench. Possibly he'll probably keep Watson in there. I mean, the thing about it, yes, Northampton tonked Portsmouth yesterday, but they're away form. Northampton, they've only won three games, and they've conceded almost 30 goals. So they're one of those teams at home. I think they've won more than we have, but that's not difficult. If you look at that, it's difficult with games like this, because, like I said, it depends how we start. If we start tight and we start first 15 minutes and it's still cagey, as it were, and we don't do anything stupid, and we don't concede early, and I think they could be there. I think he might probably start Stockley alongside Washington and keep Chucks to come on for the second half like that. I think he's more, it's horrible because I think he is probably more effective coming on when defenders are tiring. And like, I agree, I think he is marked now by referees and they look at his physicality. I mean, it's probably why we didn't get that Stonewall penalty a couple of weeks ago when he was pushed over, because they just didn't believe a bloke that size could be pushed. I don't think it's going to change too much. Obviously, you know, how their rest and recuperation has gone today to whether Fainwo, you know, he's only literally come back from, you know, quite a long layoff, whether they might look at him and say, you know, are you able to do Tuesday, Saturday now? I mean, he's a young lad, he's fit, and you'd expect the medics to be on top of that. So, but I can't see him. I can't see Bowes changing the back. Obviously, we've gone to there instead. So, yeah, it'll be pretty much as it is, Prattley coming in on the bench, because we don't really have anyone else. I don't think Morgan's only going to make a miraculous appearance back. I think there's obviously more than one issue there, which is a pity because I like Albie. And we shall see how it goes Tuesday. Let's say I think Stockley will be on and Gunter, and they'll be pretty much the same.
Yeah, well, let's see how it goes. Yeah, I think I overheard today that Bo gave him the day off again, which he did last Sunday. Again, it's not confirmed. I was sort of half eavesdropping on a conversation at the women's game, but we'll
yeah,
see.
Yeah, just as a cautionary tale on that, I mean, from watching the game from the beginning and seeing the periphery, because obviously not just what a lot of people see from the camera, Akinfenwa was stretching his groin stretching his hamstring quite a few times yesterday, and there were a few occasions where he did look a little bit leggy. He still played superbly well, by the way, and even Jason Pearce did at times. So I wouldn't be amazed if there's a shake up at the bank. I mean, obviously it's not going to be Ryan Innes yet, but the way asking Akinfenwa to play that many games in quick succession, as Mark said, he's only just back, but it looks like he might be susceptible in that area, the hamstring area. So do you risk him the next game and then he'd be out for 2 months? I'm not so sure. I think it wouldn't surprise me. I'm hoping he doesn't. Hope we stick with the same side, basically. But I wouldn't be overly surprised if he changes it a couple of players.
Well, that's interesting, because part of that conversation I overheard today was implying that someone had come in for a bit of a rub-in. So maybe that was Akin, but maybe we'll find out on Tuesday. Right, we have come to the end of this week's Charlton Live. So thanks to all of you who've listened all the way to the end. Thank you to Terry and to Mark for joining me.
Cheers, Luke.
Cheers, Lou.
Good to have you both with us. Thanks to Urfa and to Ritesh from the women's team for speaking to me earlier, and to John as well. Thanks for everyone who emailed in. We will be back on the Thursday to look back at that game against Northampton on Tuesday, and then ahead to the home game on Saturday with Shrewsbury. We look forward to speaking to you then.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.